Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. We've got an hour of romping across economics and social change on issues large and small. Why is the global recovery working as well as it is? Former IMF economist Ken Rogoff from Harvard takes us into a heated argument between economists. We'll also look at whether big corporations have more, not less, capacity to innovate than smaller startups. We look at a TV show that's changed the world, and we note that one of this country's biggest exports is Kentucky bourbon. It's the largest export category of all U.S. spirits, 28.7 million gallons to 126 different countries back in 2010. Maybe that's why Suntory of Japan is buying Jim Beam for a cool $13.6 billion. We'll talk about it. But we begin with the economic recovery and the heated arguments among economists over why it's working or not working, or whether we are actually headed out of the woods or back into it. Joining us now is a man who has been trying to remain at the center of this debate. Ken Rogoff is professor of economics at Harvard University, former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund. Ken, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So on what basis do you conclude that the U.S. is doing not only reasonably well post-recession, but substantially better than the historical record would indicate?
Well, if you compare the U.S. recovery to past recessions we've had after World War II, we are not doing well. And by the way, I'd hardly say we're doing well overall. But if you compare it to similar recessions after deep financial crises in the United States or around the world, then by that metric, we're not doing so badly. And we're not doing so badly compared to Europe. I would hardly characterize this as a great recovery. Quite the contrary, it's typical after a deep financial crisis. But it is typical. And we're not doing worse than average for what we were hit with.
Does this vindicate the notion of quantitative easing, stimulus, the acquisition of debt in the economy, something you've been very critical of in the past?
Oh, no. I think it doesn't have a clear statement about policy. I do think a lot of U.S. policies were helpful. Certainly the big monetary stimulus was good. I would have liked to have seen more, actually. The initial fiscal stimulus was good. I would have liked to have seen more infrastructure spending. And we did a little bit to help out the subprime homeowners, the low-income people who were underwater with their mortgages. But there, I would have done a lot more.
And when you say you would have done a lot more, you would have enacted policies that would have increased the aggregate debt of the U.S. Treasury in relationship with the GDP?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think as I advocated all along during the financial crisis and when you're hit with it, there's really very little to do. Debt typically doubles, and we did the right thing to do that. Of course, you know, you want a 10 to 15 year plan to sort of exit from that. But in the short term, that's absolutely the right thing to do, as we've been saying all along.
10 to 15 year plan? Oh, thou dost dream.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, things like Social Security, Medicare, you make little changes a long time in advance to try to steer the ship. But that's all you can do. And in the middle of a crisis like this, the government has to act very aggressively. And of course, it's very tough to know when to exit because, for example, the last couple of years, it seemed like Europe might be the next shoe to drop, that the euro might fall apart. So it's been very, very difficult. It's easy to have 20/20 hindsight of what should we have done. But in the thick of it, you know, I certainly wouldn't give our policies an A+, but it could have been a lot worse. And you can see that when you compare to the rest of the world.
How do you respond to the criticism that you and your colleagues have talked a lot about triggering percentages in the amount of debt that economies have, and that the numbers in this recession and recovery and, you know, guarded recovery, as you said, don't necessarily bear out that once you get to 90% debt in relationship to GDP, that growth gets sort of strangled out of the economy or reduced significantly?
Well, actually, what we actually said, as opposed to what polemicists said, we said, was that in a broad range, as debt gets high, you start to enter a vulnerability region where you're at risk of having your growth slow down. There's no sharp trigger point. There's no bright red line. And we stated that very clearly across our papers. In fact, we also did work which said that recessions last much longer than policymakers think after financial crises. And we urge strongly to have very aggressive monetary and fiscal policy. So by no means were we pushing debt to be reduced in the middle of the crisis. That would be a terrible mistake.
One thing about the polemicists you talk about, a columnist in The New Yorker suggested that you played around with numbers to come up with the 90% percentages. How do you respond to that?
We certainly did use numbers. We look at the historical data on debt, and we find that it's very rare to have debt over 90% and very, very rare over 120% historically. That's simply true. And we suggested in an early paper that we noted that growth tends to be lower in those periods, though we were very careful about not saying it was causal. But there were many papers after that. The International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank set entire divisions on studying what we did. There had been many, many papers that sort of got lost in the polemic discussion. It was widely looked at, and it was widely debated on both sides. I would say the weight of the evidence is that high debt is associated with slow growth. And I think if you look around the world at Greece, at Ireland, at Portugal, and other countries, it's sort of hard to deny that that's an effect. It's not the only thing going on. It depends on your technology. It depends on the policies your government does. It depends on many things. Growth doesn't just depend on your debt. But let's face it, no country aspires to having a really high debt. That's why countries try to ease out of it over the long run.
Although economics is dull, I guess it's really called the dismal science. It's actually quite exciting and interesting to wade into this spirited debate over your work and others. It seems to me the main issue is whether Keynes was right in his approach, and what would he make of the situation right now? What's your position on that?
Well, actually, Keynes was very eclectic about it. So on the one hand, he pushed for very strong government spending in the middle of the recession. On the other hand, as the UK approached World War II, which, of course, he greatly supported, he felt that it was important for the UK to plan ahead for an exit strategy because he saw that debt was approaching a very high level. And Keynes actually advocated very eclectic policies for dealing with debt, as do Reinhardt and I, that you have to think about having higher inflation. You have to think about things like financial repression, where I'm not talking about the United States right now, but certainly in Europe, where pension funds, banks are forced to hold more government debt than usual to help pay it down. And also just restructuring. That was a big mistake in Europe that they didn't write down debts. Obviously, the high debts in the periphery countries are a problem, and they're not likely to grow their way out of it the way that official policy says. And Keynes would, I think, have been creative in trying to find ways to escape from it. It's not all about cutting budget government budget deficits. That's not always possible. And I think in the case of Greece and other countries in the periphery of Europe, it's just not going to work. They're going to need to be more creative.
Well, then a little takeaway here. If John Maynard Keynes was alive today, do you think he would be a gadfly as he was in his day, as someone on the fringe, or very much a consensus economist based on the policies of today?
Well, I don't think we have a consensus economist today. Reinhardt and I attempt to be in the middle, and people on the right have attacked us, especially during the 2012 campaign, for saying that the recession lasted a long time because it was a financial crisis and not because of bad policies. People on the left said, well, they didn't do enough. I think there's a very broad spectrum of opinion. I don't think it's easy to know in the middle of a crisis like this exactly what the right policy is. It would have been great to have Keynes alive today. He was a magnificent thinker, and I would have been very interested to hear what his views would have been. But I don't think you can presume that we know. I don't think that, you know, people who claim to channel Keynes in the modern world necessarily know what he would have thought.
Well, we're not channeling Keynes here, but we're very interested in your thoughts. Ken Rogoff, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ken Rogoff is professor of economics at Harvard University, former economist at the International Monetary Fund.